It is Locked On Jazz for the 1st of June. A return to play plan is in place. We'll discuss it. A wild weekend for America and the world. We'll touch on the athletes' role in that and look at the Jazz and what this return to play means. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. Well, coronavirus and everything else. What a world we live in. It's just incredible right now. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar, hopefully you took advantage of the incredible Memorial Day special that they had last week. But if you didn't, there's a lot of great stuff still going on. Go to builtbar.com and enter in the promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first box. So I was texting with lots of people I really respect over the weekend, reading lots of things over the weekend. And I thought it was one of the most, I'm going to leave out, I think these texts are private. Biggest thing people can do is use their platform to try and impact some change. Thought that was a comment. It rung to me. I think it was someone kind of saying to me, hey, you got to say something. Let me say this on just kind of where we are. I think there's some really interesting aspects from a sports world standpoint. And then also from just society, and then we'll jump back to the NBA's return to play plan. So first thing I would say is it's interesting to me how important athletes are today. And maybe they always have been, right? So if we go to 1968 in the Olympics, they always have been. Two of the most meaningful pieces I read was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's LA Times editorial, Masai Ujiri's Globe piece in the Toronto paper, Jaylen Brown, very active in Atlanta this weekend, Marcus Smart, active in Boston this weekend, Colin Kaepernick, still prominent in all of this. It's interesting to me, I don't know, there's some transition here, I'd have to study it and try to figure it out, so, you know, if we go to the civil rights movement, athletes were involved, but not at this level. And now it does feel as that that's the voice that gets heard, that gets attention. I don't know if that's Twitter, if it's Instagram, if it's just a new society, if it's athletes have more prominence now, athletes have a stronger voice now. It's interesting. I don't have a great answer to it. I've studied a bunch of, you know, things of this nature and have read the civil rights movement fairly well. And so it's interesting to me just that the role of our athletes have in this is much larger as time continues and has been the entire time, right? I mean, back to Colin Kaepernick, that's a athlete making a stand that now is, 3 years old and is still certainly at the forefront of all of this. So, and will be, you know, I think he's now probably in the history books at this point. It's interesting, you know, the question I think that a lot of us get is like, what can we do? Here are some thoughts that someone gave me that I thought were good, that I thought I'd relay. And I think this comment was written to me as someone who is of, you know, what unquestionably is white privilege. Okay. There's just like, stamp it on my forehead. So the first comment they said was listen. Listen. Don't fight it. Just listen. I thought that was a really interesting comment. Like that our instinct when we hear is, oh, but. No, just listen. Just hear it. Just try to understand what the anger is or where it's coming from or what the second comment they made to me was, don't take it personal. I thought this was really good. Whenever, you know, like Steve Nash went pretty far out yesterday on Twitter. And if you read the responses, the response from almost everyone is they took it very personally. I'm white and I'm not racist. Okay, that's not the point. Society, unquestionable. Like, our history, pretty hard to deny. So when the issue comes up, if we're going to have change, if we're going to make progress, listen, and listen without taking it as a personal accusation on you. Right? It might not be in your heart at all. That's great. It has been in our society's existence the entire time. Therefore, it exists. It is what has caused, you know, causing the protest, causing the outrage. Listen. Don't take it personal when you listen. I thought that was good. I'm only addressing the kind of protest. The looting is abundantly obvious, right? Like, you break into somewhere and steal something, that's just stealing. Like, okay, that's not even worth discussing. The other comment I thought was the best was, while you don't want to believe it is in your community, it probably is. I don't think they said probably. None of us want to believe it's here, but it is. Like that, and here could be anywhere. I thought that was a really astute observation as well. We always want to believe it's a somewhere else problem. Well, right? If you look, like, you look Minneapolis, Houston, Washington, Seattle, Atlanta, Salt Lake City, it's an everywhere problem. And then the other one that I'm struck with, that this is very personal. I find myself, so I suggested two documentaries that I've watched that I thought were really good on Twitter yesterday, 13th and I'm Not Your Negro by James Baldwin. And I thought to myself, like, should I make my kids sit down and watch this? Is that the education? I kind of knew that when I tweeted that out, most people aren't going to watch it. Here's the question. Why not? Because I'm guilty of this too. Like, why not? Why aren't we going to watch it? I don't really want to know. Like, what is it that, if I told you there was a documentary out there that showed a story of the minority's path, and was tough to watch but meaningful, and I don't think most people, like, we're not going to do it. Like, there's an aversion to going to watch it. Yet if I tell you about, you know, some crazy silly movie or something, it's entertainment, right? I think we want to be entertained prior to confronting stark reality. But that's an interesting concept that, like, I think if I suggest two movies that are about the Americans' treatment of African Americans throughout society, and they're at least worth, you can decide whether you agree or disagree with them afterwards, but they're worth taking the information, the chances are your reaction, I think, for most people is like, yeah, I don't really want to do that. Like, wow, like, why not? Like, cause I'm just being honest that, like, that's probably was, you know, I'm into this stuff, so I watch a lot of it, but I don't know. So I wanted to share my thoughts. My thoughts are, what can we do? What can we do? Right? I mean, I think I've got the demographics of who's listening to this podcast. I think that's part of what I'm addressing here. I think we can listen. I think we can listen without taking it personally. I think we can make the effort to do what's uncomfortable, to learn a little bit more, to listen a little bit more, to try to understand a little bit more. And I think we can confront the truth. That is, if you ask any minority in any society, in any culture, in any city, what they've experienced, you're going to hear that it exists. You're going to hear it exists. And if your eyes are open, you're going to see it. And if your eyes are really open, you'll probably uncomfortably realize you do something every now and then that you don't even realize because society's just done it to you. So listen, don't take it personal. Take the extra effort. Do what's uncomfortable. and believe when you listen that it's true. And support. All right. NBA, return to plan. Play plan is out. We'll touch on that. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. Changing the way you think of energy bars, nutrition bars, protein bars with delicious, great taste. That's right. Only and incredible macros. Only 110 calories, 15 protein grams, and 4 grams of sugar. Plus, when you start looking at the other numbers, 5 net carbs, only 4 grams of fat. Compare that to the other leading bars, and it's a much healthier option. I had the vanilla chocolate cream for the first time this weekend. Thought that was pretty solid. Was pretty darn impressed with that experience as well. I continue to add the Built Bar to my routine and enjoy it every day. Go to BuiltBar.com. Add the promo code LOCKEDON, and you get $10 off your first box of Built Bar. You can build your own box. You can get a mixed box. They're all available for you at BuiltBar.com. Today's show is also brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. Murdoch Chevy and the Murdoch family are doing everything they can with Murdoch Sure to make sure that you feel comfortable shopping for a car right now. And then the deals they have for you are unbelievable. Let's start talking about the comfort first. You can start your buying process online. Murdoch Sure is making sure that first online you can do everything you need to do. You can look at your car. They'll bring it to you. You can test drive it. You can have the experience completely out of the office or the dealership if that makes you more comfortable. The dealership itself, the Murdoch Sure program, they're doing everything they can, following all the protocols and making sure social distancing is taking place as well as sanitary things at the top level. Chevy, they've got fabulous deals for you. If, in fact, you're a healthcare professional, get the GM first responder discount. That's till the end of this month. That's taking place right now as well. Plus, the Silverado and the Colorado trucks are the best on the market. You know the Tahoe. You know the Suburban. Plus, there's the Traverse, the Equinox to add your SUV lineups. And I love the Blazer when I got to drive it for a while. The Equinox is a really solid SUV you can get as well. So check it all out. And the new Bolt's a little bit bigger as well if you're looking for an electric car. It's all at Murdoch Chevy, located in Woods Cross, also up in Logan. So the NBA announced their return to plan play. And we talked last week about the Venn diagrams and that the Venn diagrams didn't really mesh. There's the safety Venn diagram. There's the fairness Venn diagram. There's the revenue Venn diagram. And that there is the best for basketball Venn diagram. I'll tell you what. This meshes better than a lot of things, because I'm not sure we all realize that this could fit inside the safety Venn diagram bubble. Venn diagrams are circles that intersect and you can have things. So what they're talking about now is 22 teams. It's all teams that are within 6 games of the playoffs and playing regular season games. So why that? One, revenue. Let's not kid ourselves. I think that, you know, we go back to the comment from the CEO of Sinclair, who said they expect the regional sports networks to fulfill most of their obligations in the NHL and the NBA. The NHL, I'm still not quite sure how they're doing it, and they've gotten awfully quiet about the next step, but they're supposedly going with 24 teams in 4 different sites. The NBA, 22 teams in the regular season, so you have to redo the schedule. I mean, this gets really interesting. Like, the Jazz are going to, we'll talk about the impact of the Jazz here in a minute. But we're going to get a schedule, and we'll look at it. And at some point, you get the schedule. Now that's your new kind of, and I don't know, is it 10 games? If you're putting everybody within 6, it seems like that would probably, we're going somewhere in that level. So that struck the revenue issue. That's number one. It also probably strikes a little bit on the fairness level. The World Cup model, which was really, really interesting, didn't strike the fairness model very well. It didn't. If you're LA or you're Milwaukee, you're not feeling great about that scenario. That one's not going to work for you, because you're suddenly in these brackets, having had any time to get ready. And if you have a mistake or something goes wrong, you're suddenly in an awful lot of trouble. And so it's pretty clear to me that got knocked off the table on a basketball fairness level. this probably peaks out on the basketball fairness level too, which is you're getting the regular season to play enough games so that by the time we get to the playoffs, we're ready to roll. The teams are actually ready to play well and that they've had enough games. Then there's a play-in for the playoffs, which is pretty interesting because the play-in for the playoffs gets interesting because I think it's something that could stay with us for a long time. And it seems to me that of all the creative ideas that Adam Silver had, I also and also the way you're doing this, I think you've got to be seeding 1 through 16 because there's only one extra Eastern Conference team coming, the Washington Wizards, who at 24 and 40 are still in this. Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, San Antonio, and Phoenix seem to be the others. What's interesting is that Washington at 24 and 40 get in, Minnesota at 19 and 45 does not. I guess that's a four or five game difference. So that's the explanation. It also means we're probably seeding 1 through 16. So the two major changes that are going to take place in the playoffs are we're going to have a play-in tournament and we'll seed 1 through 16. Those are two changes that have an opportunity to stick with the league long-term. So that Adam Silver, in all of his different creative and things he's looked at and models and probably trying to just get through the season as much as using it as a platform for the future, but it does seem as though that seems to be the platform for the future that he's using. So that's of interest to see. What does it mean for the Jazz? And then we'll do our final segment today. We'll go into the time machine and run back through a year. We'll do 2000. It's kind of a fun year. I think there's a good aspect to this for the Jazz. My take on where the Jazz are right now is that they need time together. They've been through a lot, right? And I think that they need playing together, winning together, feeling a togetherness that they probably don't have right now. We got separated by the corona. We had all sorts of internal turmoil because of the COVID-19. You know, as time's gone on, less and less seems to be clear on what really takes place on any of this. So let's get them back to doing what they do. Let's have Donovan scoop in for a layup. Let's have Rudy block a shot. Let's have them get some wins together. My biggest concern was that they would go to Orlando, play like 4 or 5 games, get knocked out of the playoffs because Bojan's not there, and have no collective time together to rebuild any of the essence of what they had before this all struck them. This seems to give a chance for you're going to probably start camp here at some point. I mean, if we're going to be approved by Thursday, probably, and we're starting July 31st, I'm going to guess you're probably going full throttle by late June or early July, and you're playing, you're working together and playing together and practicing together and getting back to going to battle together. And then, you know, hopefully July to August, you have some shared experiences where you win some games and you feel good about each other. And to me, I think that's probably the number one thing we need. You know, are we going to pull off some major upset and win the NBA title in this? Probably not without Bojan, right? With Bojan, there was a model, I think, certainly where you could look at it yourself and kind of say, you know, what's possible. We could shoot our way into upsetting some people, I thought. That seems a little less likely right now, so I'm not sure that I feel like that necessarily is our answer to where, you know, to what we have and where we're going as a franchise. I don't expect us to go win anything right now. But if we, you know, win a first round series, get to the second round, you never know. But, you know, missing your 20-point-a-game score and your third player is a considerable issue. Let's not Let's not underplay that. But I think time together, competitive spirit together, playing together is certainly important. Today's show is brought to you in part by Grip 6. Good old Grip 6, the great belts. I got four of them now. I got five buckles. I'm set. I started it off with the black belt and the men's ninja. And then I upgraded that belt buckle to their carbon fiber black one with a pattern on it. I thought it was super cool. My new favorite is the honeycomb. I'm finding that to be the one I probably wear more than any other right now. The coolest thing they have going right now is a two-pack builder for you where you can get two buckles, two straps, and really gets you four belts. What makes Grip 6 so great? Well, the strap and the buckle are interchangeable. They separate. There are no holes, no flaps. It fits perfectly to you, not to anyone else, just to you, right? Like instead of, well, if you don't fit in between where that hole is and that hole is, then you just have an uncomfortable belt all day. Nope. And there's no flaps. It switches underneath with a patented system that holds perfectly. They have the Ultra Light series, and they also now have a new work belt series. So if you want to use it for your work pack and hold that, you can. If you have concealed carry, you want to carry that. It's a little strict holder, a little stiffer, and it gives you a little bit better support in that. Great lineup and setup of belts at grip6.com. When you go in and enter out, check out and make sure you mention Locked On. The best deal for you right now, though, is 20% off the two-pack builder, any two belts of your choice for 20% off, and then put in Locked On in the comments. Today's show also brought to you by Blinkist. There's a bunch of books out there which you listen to or which you're interested in reading, but you don't have time. Well, Blinkist narrows it down to 15 minutes of the best takeaways, the key moments, the need-to-know information for thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down to just 15 minutes, as I said. We all want to have more information, more knowledge. 12 million people are using Blinkist to do exactly that right now. It has a massive growing library of self-help, business, health, history books. I just used it the other day to listen to Thinking Fast and Slow, which Kevin Pelton always tells me I'm supposed to read, and I never get through, so I Blinkist it on the drive the other day. 15 minutes, boom, pretty easy, pretty simple. Great way to take in the information. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA to try it free for 7 days and add 25% to your new subscription. That's Blinkist.com/NBA to start your 7-day free trial. You also get 25% off when you sign up for Blinkist at Blinkist.com. The year is 2000. George W. Bush has defeated Al Gore with hanging chads. AOL has bought Time Warner. The iPod Nano is a big deal. We're playing Crazy Frog and everyone's wearing body glitter. Gallon of regular gas is only $1.26. Aaron Brockovich, Gladiator, Traffic, and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon are our movies. Smooth by Santana is our song. American Beauty is the picture, and it's 2000, so Windows 2000 has just come out. What's going on with our Utah Jazz? All right, let's go back into the time machine to the year 2000. We'll pick it up. Right at the start of the 2000 year, we're 1 year off the lockout, and we still have Stockton and Malone holding on. 36-year-old Karl Malone, 37-year-old John Stockton. The mailman that year at 36 years old averages 26 points, 9.5 rebounds, and 4 assists. Brian Russell kind of comes into his own. He plays 35 minutes a year. He becomes the second leading scorer on that team. He takes the second most amount of shots on the team as well. Stunningly, the Jazz, despite the age of everyone, are still the 6th best offense and 11th best defense in the NBA that year. They have the 5th best attendance, but they are slow in pace of play. We're slowing this baby down. Howard Eisley's playing 26 minutes a night. Olden Polonese and Greg Ostertag and Armin Gilliam are combining for your center minutes. Jeff Hornacek has certainly slowed. He's now at 36 years old, playing just 28 minutes a night, but he shoots 48% from three, only taking 2 a game. Averages 12 points a game. Your primary starting lineup that year is John Stockton and Jeff Hornacek, Brian Russell, Karl Malone, and Olden Polonese. Howard Eisley's become your sixth man. Greg Ostertag, Armin Gilliam, Quincy Lewis, Jacques Vaughn, and a little bit of Adam Keefe off the bench for the Jazz in the year 2000. Let's run through it. The Jazz opened the year right before the turn of the Y2K not happening. They get hot. So they're 18-10 as we enter the year 2000, and they win six in a row to go to 22-10 with this aged team, which is just incredible. Then they, so they're 12 games above 500 at that point at 22-10. Then they kind of play a little below 500 for a while, come out of All-Star break and look refreshed. They win in, you know, fatigue might have had something to do with the way they faded a little bit, but they win 14 of 15 coming out of the All-Star break. Actually, they lose their first one to Boston, 101-99. Then they win 14 of 15. They win nine straight in that span. They end up winning 18 of 20 to go to 47-21. And everyone is, frankly, at that point, just kind of wondering, like, is this possible? Like, is Jerry got this group? If John and Stock Carl, like, found a way to do this, they go to 25 games above 500. On the day they beat the Seattle Supersonics, February 1st. That's a pretty good Sonic team. That's Peyton, Vin Baker, Horace Grant, Brent Barry, Ruben Patterson. And on that day, the mailman had 26. Brian Russell had 19. Hornacek played 33 minutes, had 15. Stockton played 32 minutes, had 15. These guys were just amazing. Olden Polonese, Howard Eisley came off the bench for 20 minutes and just kind of exactly what I said about the lineup of players and how they'd use them. So that was the peak. February, the Jazz on January 24th go to 15 games above 500. Then they get hot again and they go to 26 games above 500 with a win over Vancouver on March 25th. And then it peters out a tiny bit the rest of the way. They close the year still strong, frankly. They win eight of their final 14, and they go into the playoffs and play the Sonics in the first round of that playoff series in the year 2000. And pretty impressive performance by the Jazz. Beat the Sonics 104-93 in game one of that series. Paul Westphal's coaching and for some reason starts Shamon Williams. Vin Baker, having all of his alcohol problems that year now, comes off the bench, goes 4 of 18. And a guy by the name of Lazaro Burrell actually started for the Sonics, which is one no one was quite sure why. The Jazz blow out the Sonics. I actually work for the Sonics at this point. 104-93. In a blowout. Mailman had 50. Mailman dropped 50 in the first game of the playoff series at 37 years old. Are you kidding? It's incredible. 50 points, 12 rebounds. Let me just establish that I'm the dominant force in this series. Game two, the Jazz blow the Sonics out again, 101-87. Vin Baker goes back in the starting lineup this time, and Karl Malone still dominates, 23 this time. John Stockton had 21-11. Brian Russell had 19. This is a whitewash at this point. All of a sudden, the Sonics win game two, game three, and game four in Seattle, which in retrospect, like with the aged players, is the bummer. Stockton goes 1 of 8. In game three, Malone still was epic. He had 30. Hornacek goes 5 of 13. And the Jazz fall in that game. Gary Payton gets it going. He has 23-10. The Supersonics have stopped with their crazy lineups. Like Lazaro Burrell doesn't actually play or dress after starting in game one. Game four of that series, Seattle wins at 104-93. And now all of a sudden, an older Jazz team has to head back to Salt Lake City to win game five, which they do in a tough matchup, 96-93. They led by 9 going to that fourth quarter, but it got a little tight late as the Jazz, in that fourth quarter, the Jazz started the lead. As I mentioned, they led by 7 to start it. Got it up to about, got down to 1 with 8 minutes left. Then the Jazz held the lead by 4 with about 5 minutes left, but it kept kind of staying close. And the Rashard Lewis hit a shot to make it a 3-point game. Hornacek tipped in a Karl Malone miss, which is probably the key play of the game with about 1:43 left. And then, but with 25 seconds left, Gary Payton made it back down to 1. Stockton made the 2 free throws. And Chuck Person missed a 3 on the final play of the game. And the Jazz advanced to the second round of the playoffs in our year 2000. The only bummer is it just wore the Jazz out, right? I mean, the Jazz play May 5th in game 5 of that series. And then by the time they have to go to Portland and play the Blazers, who were really good then, they have to do it on May 7th. And they just get waxed. They lose game 1 by 20 to the Blazers of Arvydas Sabonis and the third seed Blazers. The Jazz were the second seed, but the Blazers had home court for some reason. I'd have to go back and look, probably division winners or something at that point in time. And the Jazz just didn't have it. Like, they got waxed early, and that game went down by 19. That Blazer team, by the way, had Scottie Pippen, Arvydas Sabonis, Rasheed Wallace, Steve Smith, Dame Stoudemire, Brian Grant, Detlef Schrempf, Greg Anthony. That was loaded with talent. By game 2, the Jazz still probably tired, lose by 18, and then lose by 20 in game 3. They show immense pride to win game 4, 88-85, before losing the game 5 in Portland, 81-79. That is your time machine step back. That is Locked on Jazz. It's a Monday edition. I believe Hollinger and Duncan have a new episode out, so feel free to jump aboard and tell your smart device to call the... Tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Hollinger and Duncan. Be safe. Be smart. Listen. Don't take it personally. Make the extra effort. We can be better. Have a great one. See you.